Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Amy Kaufman. She's a staff writer at the Los Angeles Times, whose new book, Bachelor Nation, Inside the World of America's Guilty Pleasure, is now available everywhere from the good folks at Dutton. This ABC TV reality show, The Bachelor, along with its spinoffs, has gone on for 16 years and 36 seasons, and the country is still obsessed. Amy, what's your history with covering this franchise?
It is a mixed history, Brian. I work at the LA Times and started covering the show for the paper almost 10 years ago, I guess. And, I'd recap the show, and the recaps were kind of snarky, but as a lot of Bachelor fans know, you know, that's why we watch the show, is to go on Twitter and sort of poke fun at the contestants. And so anyway, as a part of covering it, I would get invited to a lot of, you know, show tapings and interviews, and eventually those invites just stopped coming. And so my editor reached out to ABC and said, you know, what's going on with this? And they said, well, we think Amy's coverage is too negative, and so basically I became persona non grata to them.
Well, we'll get into that, but according to your book, the editors of the show create a soundbite that can be edited to have different meaning. You call this phenomenon Frankenbiting. How real is this reality show?
I mean, everyone always says, like, oh, it has to be fake. It has to be scripted, right? It's like, it's definitely not scripted, but it's produced, and it's very edited. So Frankenbiting, which you just referred to, is a term they use, not surprisingly, it comes from Frankenstein. Where you take a soundbite and you mash other things together to create the soundbite you want. So if you see someone on the show saying, like, I really see myself marrying Becca, they could edit that to make it seem like the person is saying, I don't really see myself marrying Becca, and you would see, footage of them walking the beach or, like, in the mansion, and so you wouldn't see their lips actually moving while they were using that soundbite, so you get a different meaning.
How does this show manipulate particular moments that the contestants or the Bachelor himself have in order to get a desired reaction of the contestants?
A lot of that has to do with the environment, which they call the bubble. So there's basically, you know, no outside stimulation. You're in an environment where you don't really have books, you don't have radio, television, internet, anyone you know, and you're in a hotel room or in a mansion with people who are all competing for the same man or woman, and then you have producers in your ear telling you how great that man or woman is. And so you start thinking in a way that you really wouldn't in the outside world, and when you get people on a date, you're all kind of like amped up and ready to fall in love.
In the book, you compare, and I found this very interesting, you compare the Bachelor interviews with police interrogatories. Can you explain how those are similar?
Yeah, this was interesting to me because someone sort of offhandedly said, like, oh, you know, I felt like I was being interrogated by the police. And I was like, okay, you know, exaggeration much. But when I looked into it, I was like, oh, God, very similar because, you know, in the one-on-one interviews, they are typically contestants are isolated. So they're one-on-one with a producer, just sitting right across from a producer. In a room that might be really hot. It's like the end of the day. They're tired. Maybe they've been drinking. And, you know, a producer is saying to them, you know, do you think you're falling in love with Becca? And then the person responds, like, well, I don't know. I'm just not there yet. And you're like, well, really? You don't think you're there yet? Everyone else has said I love you. You don't think your feelings are there? If you don't say it, you might get sent home. And it basically reasking questions in a million different ways to get the desired answer they want. And a lot of contestants said by the end of the night, you know, they were so tired and over it, they would just give the sound bite because they wanted to get out of the room.
Kind of work them down, right?
Exactly. Yeah, wear them down.
What's the off-camera experience like for the contestants as far as their isolation from both The Bachelor and other contestants?
Well, I think a lot of people, you know, when I ask, like, why did you sign up for this, a lot of people will say, you know, oh, it sounds, like, so fun, a free vacation, you get to travel the world, and that's not necessarily always, like, how it turns out. Yes, sometimes if you make it far, you do get to travel to, like, right now they're in Thailand and the Maldives, but for the most part, you're not really, like, wandering the streets and getting to act like a tourist. Your environment's very controlled. Like I said, a lot of times you're just literally locked in the hotel room and getting room service, which, yes, is better than, like, being at your desk at a 9-to-5, I guess. But it's not always quite as glamorous as people think. And even in the mansion, they're staying in, like, bunk beds with, like, 12 people in a room. You know, it's not the height of luxury, exactly.
So by the time the winner's chosen, how much time is that winner actually spent with the bachelor leading up to that?
The entire process is about 8 weeks, but, you know, bachelors in the past have been, like, the final person I chose, I spent maybe 40 hours with. You know, it's not a ton of time.
So, I mean, these things can't work out in real life. Spending 40 hours with somebody, that's not enough to even know if you like them, let alone love them, right?
I mean, it can, I guess, you know, leap of faith sometimes works out, but obviously they don't have a great track record, and people find out a lot of things they didn't have time to discuss. For example, this season there is a guy in the final two who's sort of been the subject of some controversy because fans discovered that he had liked a handful of sort of transphobic, homophobic, really bigoted posts on Instagram, and he came out and had to apologize for that. A lot of people were saying, like, well, Becca the Bachelorette is this liberal woman. She's been to women's marches. She has Joe Biden as, like, the background on her Twitter page. How could she not know that this guy had certain Republican viewpoints? And, you know, I think that's something we will find out more as the show progresses. Like, do you guys not even talk about this?
Well, in the book, you write about the extensive application process for the contestants, and it includes a medical exam, which I didn't know about. What did you learn about that whole process, and how does it work?
Yeah, so you have to, of course, you know, sit for a bunch of interviews and have criminal background checks and, you know, psychologists analyze you, but you also have your blood and urine tested to see if you have any STDs, because they're very strict about that. They don't, because people are, of course, engaging in that kind of activities. They don't want any STDs on the show. And I guess the number one reason producers said that people don't get through is herpes.
And I mean, and I guess I've seen all the commercials that say 1 in 6 Americans have herpes. But people apply for this. Do they know this is coming up? Because I would think if they know it's coming up, they're just not going to apply.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people said, a lot of the producers were like, it was very, we had many uncomfortable discussions where we'd call someone and be like, so we're really sorry, you know, we can't have you on the show and you should probably call your doctor. So not only you're being rejected from a reality show, but you find out you have herpes that way, it's like not the best.
You're in the middle of the Los Angeles media circle and you used to have this tremendous access to the show and you mentioned it earlier. That changed. Why did that change?
Well, yeah, like I said, you know, I guess they found my coverage too negative, and so I was no longer invited to a lot of the press events. But I still was a fan, and I, like you said, I'm in L.A., and so not surprisingly, a lot of people who aspire to be famous or reality stars tend to be in this area. So I would, you know, my path would still cross with them, and sometimes we'd actually invite, my friends and I would invite some of the people from the show to come watch with us at my house, like during my weekly viewing party. And it was during those encounters that I would start grilling people about what the show was like. And they would sort of, they were telling me these stories that I couldn't believe about why they said things that they said. And, you know, like someone would be a villain on TV and then be in my living room and I'd be like, this is not who this person is. And I totally thought they were horrible. So I thought, you know, if enough contestants would talk about their experience, that there might be a book in it, and turned out there was.
As you cover these shows, though, I mean, it seems almost political as to why you were blacklisted, for lack of a better term, but it's kind of like when somebody negatively covers the White House, and then the president, for whatever reason, moves them to the back of the room or doesn't let them into press conferences. Is that politics pretty prevalent with all different shows in Los Angeles?
I mean, you know, not to be too dramatic about it, but that's a good point. You know, I think, like, you think, okay, you know, there's publicity teams for films and television and celebrities, and they always want to just put the best foot forward. But at a certain point, it's about, like, controlling the media and controlling the narrative. And I know when certain journalists in D.C. have been kicked out of press conferences, other journalists have stood alongside them and said, well, you know, we won't stand for this because once you start treating one person like that, standards for how you can control the media really become a little bit scary, in my opinion. So you're right. I think it's something that is not just exclusive to Hollywood, but of course happens all the time here in my job. In terms of just even like setting up interviews with actors, you know, there's all these parameters people want to put on it. And even once you do the interview, you know, you get questions about how you're going to present the interview. Everyone is very conscious of their image in 2018. So, yeah.
But nonetheless, media consumers want to read about the inner workings of these types of shows, right?
Of course, yeah. And that's why I think it's incumbent on journalists to keep standing up even when they do face these threats. Of course, that's easier said than done, especially when you're the person who's saying your fake news is the president of the United States.
So as we know more, thanks to your book, we know a heck of a lot more about The Bachelor than we ever did, and you know more than any of us. Can you still watch the show for its entertainment value alone, or does it lose something when you know what's going on behind the scenes?
You know, I've always, for the past few years, I think because you said, you know, I live in L.A. and a lot of my friends are in this industry, we've always kind of watched, like, oh, well, that scene's edited, or a producer, you know, must have suggested that. I don't think it's been sort of a quote-unquote pure experience for a while, but I usually get pretty sucked in at the end, you know, the point we're at now in the Bachelorette season where there seem to be some real feelings forming, at least for the moment. I can sort of suspend my cynicism and enjoy just the gooey, fake romance part at the end. I do like it.
You interviewed a lot of celebrities for who are fans of The Bachelor for the book, Amy Schumer and Donnie Wahlberg, just to name a couple, and they're part of the entertainment industry, so they see the show as entertainment for which it's intended. But do they watch the show a different way compared to those of us in flyover country who are just turning on the TV week to week?
No, I think really not. You know, and a lot of the celebrities I spoke to had conflicting feelings about being fans, just like so many of us do. You know, Amy Schumer in particular was saying, like, there's no woman really on the show who looks the way she does, who might be like curvier or doesn't have a six pack. And this is a show where, you know, they're like, by us watching it every season since 2002, we're saying, okay, these are the kind of women who are deserving of love, who look a certain way. And that beauty standard gets upheld season after season. And so that is something she found super problematic, and yet she was like, it's my favorite show, and I watch it every week. So I think a lot of us, you know, when we're watching, we're like, oh, this isn't great, or like, I don't love what this is saying about, you know, men and women, and yet we ignore those feelings because it's fun to watch. So
when you're
a lot of the celebrities feel the same way we do, yeah.
As you interview celebrities for your job, not just for The Bachelor, but for other things, I mean, for this book, you talked to Donnie Wahlberg and Amy Schumer, like I said. Those are two people who I've watched for years. But nonetheless, this is your job to cover them. Do you find that you have to sift through a lot of the celebrity speak, so to speak, to get to the point of what any of these celebrities are trying to tell you? Because they all want to promote their own brand.
Well, those two you mentioned, I think, are actually two of the more real celebrities. Like, Donnie Wahlberg was very honest about, you know, on his show Blue Blood, saying, like, he's so obsessed with The Bachelor, he will literally tell the crew, like, guys, it's 6 p.m., and we have to wrap up shooting, because, like, I need to get home to watch this show, which I thought was funny. But, yeah, in general, you know, that's why, as journalists, we press for more time, or to do something off of sort of a press junket in an environment where the person feels more comfortable, because you want them to be as quote unquote real as possible. And yes, they're never going to like bare their soul to you or maybe be who they truly are in their off time. But you know, that's my dog. he's also fed up with the fake celebrities.
Well, as a journalist that covers this, do you have to fact check when you interview a celebrity, or do you kind of take it and put it in, because that's what people want to know, is what the celebrity said?
Yeah, you know, we do fact checking, of course, but a lot of times if they're talking about, like, a movie they were in or a television project, it's not as stringent as it might be in the fact checking process for a book like this, for example, where you're talking about some more controversial things.
All right. Well, the book was just so interesting. Bachelor Nation, Inside the World of America's Favorite Guilty Pleasure by Amy Kaufman. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold. And you can also read Amy and her coverage in the Los Angeles Times. Go online and read that. Amy, fantastic offering. Thanks for joining us today to talk about it.
Thank you so much.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.